And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, December 2nd, 2021. Rebels of the National Salvation Front set conditions for resuming negotiations with the Kiir administration.
We want, first of all, revisit our past agenda. There are outstanding issues that were not being discussed.
And an identified armed group kill women in Jonglei State.
They fought in ambush. We heard that three women got killed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The spokesman of the National Salvation Front says his group welcomes President Salva Kiir's call for a return to peace talks that collapsed 3 months ago. Samuel Suba says his group will only return to Rome for talks once there is a clear agenda on 4 key issues. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Suba Samuel, the NAS spokesperson, says while his group welcomes a return to the talks, this time round it wants to have a clear roadmap on an agreed agenda. He says having a clearly defined roadmap will enable the parties to focus on real issues. The 4 key issues are a definition of the nature of the conflict, internal borders, security, and a process to create a constitution.
We want, first of all, revisit our past agenda. There are outstanding issues that were not being discussed. There are around 4 issues that need to be resolved. So we need to resolve from those 4 issues. So once those issues are resolved, then definitely it will take way for, of course, the signing of the Declaration of Principles. And therefore now we can use it as a framework for now doing a political, serious political discussion on how we can now address the root causes of the conflict.
At the time the peace talks collapsed, the parties were discussing a Declaration of Principles. Samuel says besides signing a cessation of hostilities agreement during the last round of talks, the parties had agreed on issues of governance such as federalism and the process of creating a permanent constitution. He says during the next round of the talks, he expects his group and the government to define the nature of the conflict so they can arrive at a realistic solution that will address the causes of the conflict which broke out in 2013. Samuel says the NAS and the government have not agreed on and defined the nature of the conflict, a problem they want to resolve. He says there is a need for the two parties to contextualize the conflict to resolve it.
For them, they say, no, it is political. This war is not political. And always I've been giving an example. If the war is political, when it started in 2013, if it is a political, for instance, the disagreement within SPLM, then what led the government to send their troops to go and target Nuer communities, children, elderly who are not political? In their homes, in Mangaten, in Oliang or Oliang and the like. What made them to do that?
Samuel says the NAS wants to discuss with the government internal borders and land issues. The group wants the internal borders to be redefined based on the administrative marking of January 1st, 1956. He says this issue is key because several of the conflicts in the country are land-related, and tackling it in the negotiations will provide an opportunity to resolve it. Samuel says agreeing on a clear agenda will generate some trust and confidence among parties in the talks, adding its negotiating partner created mistrust by suspending the talks.
What kind of discussions are we going to have? Does those discussion addresses aims at addressing the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan? Does the talks generated enough political will that is necessary for us to have soberness and open mind and discuss genuinely in order to bring the problem of South Sudan to an end and build a prosperous nation that will be home to all the 64 tribes in South Sudan.
Earlier this week, President Salva Kiir told a governor's forum in Juba that his government is returning for peace talks with the South Sudan Opposition Movement, or SOMA, an umbrella of rebel groups that includes the National Salvation Front. Kiir says he is returning to the talks without any condition and that is in the interest of efforts to ensure the peace process is inclusive. Kiir suspended his government's participation in the talks in August after accusing members of South Sudan opposition movement for creating instability by attacking and killing civilians on highways across the country, a claim SOMA denied. The Saint Egidio-led mediation is aimed at supporting an inclusive peace agreement in South Sudan by persuading the Hold Out group to join the revitalized peace deal signed in September 2018. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Authorities in South Sudan's Jonglei state say at least 3 women were killed and 18 others, including young girls, were abducted in Akobo County on Wednesday. The Akobo County Commissioner says the women were ambushed when they were returning from fishing in the River Nile in Akobo West. Twang Majok, the acting governor of Jonglei state, condemns the attack. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Garwich Red Deng, the Akobo County Commissioner, says 23 women had gone to fish and to buy smoked fish in Akobo West and were returning home when unidentified men attacked them late Wednesday evening. Deng says only 2 of the women managed to escape.
They were coming from fishing place in which they were carrying the rice towards Akobo West, Yam Sport Wong. Then they fall in ambush. We had that 3 women got killed and 18 abducted. This includes a woman and girl.
Commissioner Deng says the attackers headed east toward the neighboring Greater Pibor administrative area. He says area residents are pursuing the suspected attackers. Jai Adingora Alual, the information minister in the Greater Pibor administrative area, says he had not been informed about the incident. However, Alual says some armed young men have been mobilizing fellow young people in the remote villages of Nanam and Lilkwangule for unknown reasons and they could be carrying out the attacks.
We do not have official information from our counterpart. The government of Jonglei State did not notify us. We are not also notified by the commissioner of Akobo County. Actually, I cannot say it did not happen or it happened because it is, if they report it, it means that it happened in their sites. But
Alual says challenges such as a lack of feeder roads and communication networks in the area make it difficult for Pibor authorities to quickly detect and prevent criminal activities. But Alual says Pibor officials, including chief administrator, Lokalia mayor, are making arrangements to visit the area to halt the criminal activities.
Those people there are there just by themselves. There is no government close to them. There is no even humanitarian services to them, and there is no road to the place. There is no network. It is actually very remote. As such, there is need for the government presence in that location so that we will sensitize them about the importance of it and also try to stop them from all the activities that they are doing, and we hope that it will work this time.
Twang Majuk, the acting governor of Jonglei State, condemns the killing and abduction of women and girls in Akobo West, calling it a grave violation of human rights. Majuk urges the authorities in Greater Pibor to immediately find the abductees and return them as soon as possible.
The government has strongly condemned beyond the normal, and we are paying our heart condolence to those families who lost their wives in a fatal ambush, and also those women who have been abducted. The egg is not normal, then it's not accepted. We want to echo to our greater Pibor administrative area to question the youths which are at large.
Several fatal road ambushes and abductions have been reported recently across Jonglei State. Acting Governor Majuk says the incidents have put the region at the verge of falling back into communal invasion and attacks.
Community of Jonglei State or counties of Jonglei State always went to Greater Pibor in anger, not by intent. When the occurrences are always recycling the way it is, that makes the youth anger and act violently in abnormal manner. Our fear is that the incident after incident, from day and day and from week to week, we don't know what may have happened with the youth and government. But we don't support any violence to happen between communities.
In 2019, President Salva Kiir approved a plan to intensify joint police patrols along the borders of the Greater Pibor Administrative Area and Jonglei State to contain cattle raids and abductions. Under the plan, a police force of 2,500 young men and women from different ethnic communities would be trained to fight organized crime and maintain law and order. Kiir instructed the National Police Service to make arrangements for the training and deployment of the new recruits in the border area of Gadiang, but the plan has yet to materialize. In January, the president said he will no longer intervene should communities in Jonglei engage in fighting. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
South Sudanese legislators at regional bloc, the East African Community, have welcomed a declaration it will increase the number of job slots for South Sudanese citizens at the Secretariat. The head of the South Sudan Caucus at the East African Legislative Assembly says while the decision is welcomed, South Sudan expects the whole recruitment process to be overhauled and managed properly. For VOA News, Mungume Davis Rwakarinj reports from Kampala, Uganda.
Adan Muhammad, the chairperson of the East African Community Council of Ministers, said this week that the EAC had resolved to increase a number of job slots for South Sudanese nationals.
In line with the tradition of the East Africa Community, new member states that join that do not have the same advantage in generating the same number of applicants, we will preserve certain roles. A number of roles, and we have agreed that 11 roles will be made available for the Republic of Southern Sudan over and above the 5 that were shortlisted in the ongoing recruitment. So if the 5 also succeed in the recruitment, technically they will have 11 plus.
In addition, a number of positions will be reserved for Burundi and Uganda. In October, representatives from Uganda and South Sudan boycotted the sittings of the East African Legislative Assembly to protest what they termed as unfair recruitment exercise for the secretariat staff. South Sudanese legislators cautiously welcomed this week's announcement. Ani Ito is the head of the South Sudanese Caucus at the East African Legislative Assembly. She says the announcement means that the secretariat admits wrongdoing in the employment process.
We would want in such a thing for Burundi to receive its fair share, Uganda to receive her fair share, Kenya and all the partner states. Number one, we are representing all East Africans. Number two, we legislate, but most importantly, we oversight all organs and institutions of EAC. No matter what the benefits of the affirmative action is to South Sudan, it should not be at the expense of efficient running of a very important organ of the community, such as the secretariat.
It was said several weeks ago that out of more than 300 people who were shortlisted for different EAC vacancies, Tanzania had 83 people, Kenya had 73, Rwanda and Uganda had 53, Burundi had 35, while South Sudan had only 14 people shortlisted. It says only 4 South Sudanese are currently employed by the EAC. The East African Community is a regional intergovernmental organization that includes Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, South Sudan, and Uganda. Its headquarters is in Arusha, Tanzania. South Sudan joined in 2016. According to EAC rules and principles, all citizens from member states are to enjoy the same recruitment and employment rights and opportunities. The top competitive jobs at the EAC Secretariat include those of registrar and the deputy registrar, which are supposed to be held on a rotational basis. Other jobs are in accounting, human resource, fisheries and administration, among others. Ito says going forward, the secretariat should respect the quota system. Kennedy Kuria, another South Sudanese legislator at the EAC, agrees. Kuria says South Sudanese also should be given senior positions at the secretariat.
Yes, we welcome this, but again, we need to define which positions are those. Because as per the establishments that is currently underway, you find that most of the positions are very junior positions. Those are the positions that are reserved, and that it might favor the host country. So we have to watch really which position that the council is talking about.
The EAC will discuss admission of new member DR Congo in coming days. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, analysts say Sudan's economic challenges is here to stay. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Sudan's battered economy has remained an unresolved issue and has continued to threaten transition even before the military takeover. High inflation and shortages of medicine, food, and fuel have continued to plague the population. Sudan's effort to introduce economic reforms, which includes clearance of its overdue payment to the World Bank, after the U.S. provided bridge financing of $1.15 billion U.S. dollars, allowing it to access new types of financing for the first time in nearly three decades, are now in doubt. Amal Ataib, a Sudanese-American economist, explains to VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi how cuts to the international aid could deepen the country's economic challenge.
Unfortunately, the cut of international aid will deepen the problems of Sudan with respect to foreign currency, because Sudan had started a very slight progress in the few months before the military coup. Prices had started to go down, and Sudan had accumulated a reserve with the central bank that exceeds $1.5 billion, which had never happened in the last year or during the governance of the dictatorship of al-Bashir. And going back to square one will deepen the economic problem, increase prices, devalue the currency of Sudan, which may lead to higher prices, which is disastrous when you have an inflationary country like Sudan, which needs any assistance so as to move forward.
So how could the military take over derail Sudan's effort to introduce economic reform, which includes clearance of its overdue payments to the World Bank after the U.S. provided a bridge financing of $1.15 billion, allowing Sudan to access new types of financing for the first time in nearly three decades?
Sudan was deprived from any money from the World Bank in the last three decades because the government of al-Bashir didn't pay the arrears for the loans which Sudan had taken so far, and the debt accumulated by arrears. But we really appreciate the assistance of the donors and mainly the assistance of the United States, which made the payment of arrears in the amount of $1.15 billion to the World Bank on behalf of Sudan, which was a money that was paid from a grant money, like it is a loan for Sudan, but it will open the window for Sudan so as to get finance from the international community, mainly from the World Bank, which had blocked Sudan for the last 30 years.
A month before the military coup, the World Bank held its first visit to Sudan in nearly 40 years when its president, David Malpass, said, over the next year, we will commit about $2 billion in grants to support the government's efforts to reduce poverty and boost economic growth. Would the reinstatement of Prime Minister Hamdok revive such international aid?
I hope so. I hope that the revival of Hamdok and will bring that assistance back, but I doubt it because the grip of power is still in the hand of the military, though their partnership should have had ended on November 17th. And I think that was the main reason of the coup, which had took place on October the 25th. And unfortunately, Sudan may lose the opportunity of engaging with the international community and getting those grants. And I could cite an example, like many countries, like there was an initiative by President Biden of giving Sudan $700 million in support of the transitional government, which was stopped on the morning of October 25th, immediately after the coup. So that money was a grant to Sudan, and other countries may also be reluctant to give money, specifically the World Bank, who has stopped disbursement of all funds and assistance to Sudan on the same day of the coup. And this was announced by the World Bank. So we are losing the $2 billion which the World Bank is providing to Sudan in grants for economic recovery, economic development, and for poverty reduction.
That's Amal Ateib, a Sudanese-American economist. She was speaking with VOA's senior analyst, Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. The new mayor of South Sudan's capital, Juba, says he is working to address traders' concern about high and unclear taxes the city council levies. Mayor Michael Alijabu says one of his priorities is to digitize revenue collections to end having tax collectors move from one shop to another collecting taxes, a process he says may be abused. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Michael Adu Alijabu, the mayor of Juba City Council, says he is aware of several complaints from traders regarding multiple taxes the council imposes. He says he has started meeting with the city council staff to understand what they charge and at what rates. Alajabu says he will address the issue because he understands that the charges the council imposes affects the whole South Sudan community.
One of the very important things also that I have to do as a priority is to improve the administrative and management of the city council as a system. And also to see that the revenue collection system is to be digitalized. And this is to minimize misuse of funds and also to see that we minimize corruption or stop it completely. The third priority is to meet the traders who are working within the jurisdiction of Juba City Council in the three blocks, councils, Juba, Kator, and Munuki. That is through meeting with them so that we are able to harmonize prices in the market and reviewing the rate schedule and stop unnecessary fines or penalties.
Alajabu says he aims to build a strong relationship between the council and the traders so that they have a common understanding that helps the traders continue providing services to the public. He says he intends to organize foreign exchange visits for technical staff to learn how city councils in other countries operate. Alajabu says he is also working to keep Juba City clean, green and beautiful, something he says is difficult because the city's trash compactors have broken down. He says the city council is working to hire companies to help collect garbage.
With our mega resources, we are hiring trucks from private companies. They are the one now trying to work hard in order to see that garbages are not seen everywhere on their roads. And sincerely speaking, every day I move at the night, around 9, 10, around the city of Juba to see the aspect of garbages within the city. I found that most of those roads where people are bringing garbage and put in the middle of the road, like the Budele Road and then the airport road, they're starting bringing them in around 7 up to 9. And then in the morning, our trucks are just moving in those roads and then they collect those garbages and take it.
Alajabu says with time, he will have Juba City Council start collecting rubbish from residential areas. He also plans to continue to open and expand more roads, something he says will help keep Juba clean and beautiful because it will ease accessibility for services like water or security. Alajabu says he has talked to the Vice Chancellor of the University of Juba to lease the university's empty space in Customs Market to accommodate street vendors to reduce traffic and leave a beautiful city.
And they give me a go-ahead initial approval. So I'm going to get all those hawkers who are there in the custom there, on the road there, at the side of the road, in order to get them compacted inside there. There would be open places that we can leave for those people who cannot make rakuba. And then those who are able to make rakubas, they can make rakubas for themselves in that particular fence. Because you want really to see also and to be sympathetic to our people, because we will not deal with them as though they are not our citizens. So everybody know the situation, economic situation in Juba City, and you see people are surviving by this PTPT job.
Alajabu says he has noticed many people don't follow the laws as they should, and that situation at times means security must enforce them. But he says Juba City Council lacks enough police to do so, and they are forced at times to get backup from other security forces, and that means the council must provide support services to them. He calls on state government to allocate more police in Juba City Council. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with some song from Eastern Equatorial State. We have been listening to a group from Eastern Equatorial State. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.